direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. The Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have a couple of hours to spend together, and if it's on your mind, I'll make sure that it's on mine, providing it has no significance whatsoever. Though April 15th is a significant day, as I saw driving by the post office with people in line, which surprised me a little, not because they were last-minute filers. That didn't surprise me at all, but that it wasn't done online or in some way that precluded having to get a stamp. And I guess a number of people lined up today for it. And yes, April 15th it is. So, of course, you know we got to play income tax evasion, and we will. But thinking about it and thinking about the ease of filing online, we have yet another cybersecurity disaster. This one comes to you courtesy of a hack to, well, you're not going to feel too sorry for the victims, I don't think, because we're talking about people in 46 states who had breathalyzer devices installed on their cars, which means, of course, that they got nabbed for drunk driving and convicted of same, and one of the conditions of their roaming the streets freely was an interlock device on their ignition, requiring you to blow into them, and you have a statemented threshold for basically no alcohol. You know, it's much, much lower than the legal limit. But the problem happened when, like I say, 46 states, drivers got in the car. No way would the car turn on. Yeah, no way would, in fact, it even calibrate or receive any information whatsoever. What happened? Well, on something like this, there's a back-end system now, you know, and Intoxilock. Don't you love that? A cyber attack on Intoxilock caused the devices unable to verify compliance. So, yes, failure in the cloud, don't you know? So that started around mid-March, and you saw people starting to take to social media. Again, how do you really feel much sympathy? Because you know how they wound up with the device. But regardless, what do you tell your employer when you can't show up for work? Yeah. So the bottom line, the company said, oh, the vehicle's safety systems were not compromised, and the measurements remained accurate. It's just that we couldn't record them. That's right. And that the car did not move. So there you have it. And yeah, compliance meets connected infrastructure, and that will happen. Now, occasionally, an interlock device will fail to connect, but never until now had it been the kind of hacked where it was all of them in 46 states. And so so there you have the latest in that. I was also taking a look at the Tesla truck, because I've never seen so many articles and YouTube videos and other things. People hate this damn thing. And it looks really cool. I'll give it that. But apparently, it's a literal disaster start to finish. So I'll avoid that for the moment and talk to Don in Beloit. Don, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you doing?
Hey, Raleigh.
Yeah.
Lots of weather.
Tell me about it. What's going on?
Well, we just have lots, you know, so many storms. It's just what spring's all about, you know.
Well, right, exactly. It's every year at this time. But I'm still, when David Jennings did the news yesterday and said they didn't know if it was a tornado or a hurricane at O'Hare, my mind is still boggled about that concept.
Yeah. I was asking you, I don't know the answer to this, that's why I'm asking you, is have we heard lately from that?
You've gone away again. I don't know how your phone does this. Do you walk around while you're talking? Are you in a car? What is the deal? You know, I'll get three sentences that I can hear, and then it goes away. So stay still.
I'm so sorry. I'm gonna get a landline as best I can.
Well, the big thing is you've got to be moving around. There's nothing that would cause it otherwise. You're sitting there in the same place and nothing changes.
By my window. Yep.
Yeah, well, at the very least, change carriers.
Well, it's the Spectrum part of the deal that's the trouble.
Well, there you go.
We have limited problems and limited antennas. Yeah. Okay, Carol, is it Carol, the woman that's brilliant? She's so smart when it comes to the 60s music encyclopedia in Madison. Is that her name?
No.
The blind woman?
Yes, yes. I think it's Karen.
Karen. Okay, I'm sorry. Very bad. Have we heard from her lately?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, I just really appreciate her. Like many of your listeners, you know, she's just so smart when it comes to so many. And her knowledge of all the songs is just amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a specialized bit of knowledge. And thank God for shows like this, because otherwise it's utterly useless information.
Well, you have so many great callers. I always like it when she calls in. And I was going to do a shout-out about Madison, as I'm often in this neighborhood, for the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Yes.
Oh, what an amazing... I'm often right by their building, and I should just go in it someday.
Yeah.
But they got, I just wanted to tell people, they got a wonderful website, and I did not know they did this, but they do an art show thing with the variously blind and visually impaired people each year. And their gallery of this stuff, I was just going through it for the last few years. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing the things that they do as a council to help people.
Yeah.
So. You've got so many great listeners, Riley, and so many blind listeners. You know, I just thought I'd do a shout out about reaching out to them.
Absolutely. No, you will. You betcha. And it is a great organization. And they've got a store there with a lot of wonderfully adaptive things you can buy as well.
So. It's a really cool neighborhood. It's right off of downtown on the east side near a beach. Near a big bike shop. It's right near...
Yeah, it's on Williamson.
Willie Street. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yep. Sorry. Well, I had a weird thing happen to me computer-wise.
Oh, yeah?
I couldn't get access to a site that my buddies were all having no problems with. And I couldn't figure... I could get to the site, but I couldn't get, like, PDFs off of it.
Okay.
And people are like, well, what's the problem? You know, it's no big deal. And then we shared screens. We compared. This took days and days of professionals helping me.
Are you?
So I thought it was like.
Are you using a Windows machine?
Oh, sure.
Well, then
it didn't matter what I was doing.
Yeah, but you know, you had a security setting you had to change, and then the world would be
exactly.
Erased. It's always
my laptop had a new, it was a brand new laptop, and it had a security setting that they didn't have, I found out.
Exactly. And they would, by the way, they may not have it now, but one update later or two updates later, they'll get it. And that happened to me last night until I could figure out which one it was, because it knocked off my screening program saying it was insecure. And, of course, what it was, an update decided it was going to turn on a smart feature. And, of course, I've since turned it off on a dozen computers.
Yeah.
But, whenever you're having that where you can't do something, you can almost bet, especially if it's dreaded Windows, that you've got a security feature.
And it was on my own machine.
Well, of course it would be.
It has to do with something. Yeah, it was something called Seraphic Security Setting or something.
I don't know.
It's some company that makes secure gateway kind of things to protect you. And once I got that cleared up, I was like, downloading PDFs like crazy.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's a third party, and it might have come with the laptop you bought because the Windows laptops are loaded with stuff, unfortunately.
Sure.
I don't use them. But the deal is that even within the Windows operating system, they will turn on features that will drive you nuts. So if you wake up one day and your computer isn't doing what you want it to do, you get over there to settings and go over there to security, privacy and security,
right,
and start to look around.
Right. Just look around. That's exactly right.
Yep. Yep, and anything that has to do with apps, you know, all that. But I don't advise anybody use those smart features. So
sure,
there you have
sure.
it. But yes, they'll turn them on without telling you. Don't you just love that? You know, that drove me nuts because, of course, if I knew it an hour before the show, I could have found it. But I found it out while the show had started, and of course, trying to multitask at the same time, it took me damn near an hour. But I knew what it was. I just didn't know where to find it. So finally, I did. So yeah, it's Windows is just a joy.
Me and some of my neighbors that, you know, I have a lot of friends that, you know, aren't tech savvy, you know, and we've all been talking about like some local places that you can get so much great help if you look for it. And so we're all using a certain private place for our own personal like laptop issues and stuff. But I don't think people realize you just need so much professional help for many of these things above and beyond your control that if you have a place you can trust, that's really goes so far.
I'd say get a junior high kid. They'll know. That's all you need, because the bottom line is they have time. They can't go out at night. They're sitting in their bedroom. They've got it all figured out. Trust me. Just get a kid.
And by the time they hit 16, 17, forget it.
Yeah, but no, literally that will usually serve you well, because it's not a function of everybody doesn't know how to do it. It's that few people have the time, and when it hits you on the fly, you don't necessarily have the time to intuit it right away. But the kids, they'll know it. So yeah, find a kid.
Right.
All right, good to talk to you, Don. Thank you.
That's awesome. Have a good show. All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Okay, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, and they're what I hate is they're making computers more inaccessible as far as the guts because they're trying to make them a simple stupid. But that drives me crazy. And that's what I used to love about Apple is that there was nothing in the operating system that was read-only and anything. And now, of course, there's so much read-only junk, I just go crazy. But that's another story. Yes, income tax evasion and other requests are coming up on WGN Radio.
Send it my 1040 form. I'm gonna get my refund. I might lie a little bit, but think of all that money I'm gonna get. Cause I'm old and I'm poor, and I'm gonna need me something to rest my soul. To the blood bank, Red Cross too. To my wardrobe, my Cadillac too. The money I wasted mad my wife, the money I lost in divorcing her, plus the fortune she spent on a tea party, will all be on my form 1040.
Income tax evasion, you better pay. Income tax evasion, all home of the love. Yeah, yeah. Income tax evasion.
On line one, I leave out the money I made off bootleg slave. On 3, 4, and 5, I'll have to put down a few more lies. Cause the money I made in dividends and the money I got through trickery will stay right in the middle of my palm, cause it won't go in my 1040 form. I live in a new address now. There's no trees or grass, and as you pass, you'll see the walls of Alcatraz.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, the Jesse James Singers. It was James Godfrey James, actually, who was somewhat of a soul records guy in Los Angeles in the mid-60s, and it was on a little-known label, BIT, B-I-T, in 1964. And I play it once a year, usually on April 15th, so Income Tax Evasion. And I have absolutely no idea what happened to James, Godfrey James, let alone the Jesse James Singers. The label was weird, like I said. It was, you know, mid-60s for 2 years. Mel Williams had some stuff out on that, and I loved him when he was with the Johnny Otis Show. Yeah, Stay With Me, one of the truly great records. So, yeah, but I digress. After the news, I'll digress some more, because we're going to talk to Mike in Elmwood Park, and he's been waiting to hear Jim Lowe for some time now, so we'll give him Green Door. We've got a number of your other requests coming up, and your calls as well. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine, whatever you'd like to discuss. Otherwise, we can just talk about this day in history, April 15th. In addition to Tax Day, well, the first McDonald's franchised location opened. Now, of course, this is not the first location. This is not the McDonald Brothers in San Bernardino. But this was when Ray Kroc, who had been a salesman, I think those milkshake machines and stuff, and that's what enthralled him about the McDonald Brothers, was the milkshakes they were making. But he got the franchise rights, and the first one opened today, April 15th, 1955, Des Plaines. Yeah. And I think at the time the hamburger was 15 cents. Oh. Well, we'll leave that right there and pick it up right here, right after the news on WGN Radio.
Midnight, one more night without sleep. Watching till the morning comes creeping. Green door, what's that secret you're keeping?
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. They let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door.
Not once tried to tell them I'd been there. Door slammed, hospitality's thin there. Wonder just what's going on in there.
Saw an eyeball peeping through a smoke cloud behind the green door. When I said Joe sent me, someone laughed out loud behind the green door. All I want to do is join the happy crowd behind the green door.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's Jim Lowe, well-known disc jockey, particularly in New York for years on WNEW, but in 1956 he was on Randy Wood's Dot with the Green Door. Hutch Davey wrote the music, and it was Marvin Moore who did the lyrics on that, and it was interesting because Hutch was great. I mean, he did all sorts of things. You should know the name, but if not, well, let me give you some names to think about when you think about Hutch Davey, and I'm not going to get into the early days, you know, big bands and all that. But let's move on to things like producing Linda Scott's I've Told Every Little Star, Don't Bet Money, Honey, did The Angels Till and Cry Baby Cry, James Ray, If You Gotta Make a Fool of Somebody, did stuff for Bob Crew, and he arranged Santo and Johnny's Sleepwalk, yeah, as far as that goes, but worked with everybody from the Four Seasons to Oliver, you name it. So he was well known, but in 56, here he was tasked with making Green Door sound good. And one of the things he did, he played piano on it. And one of the things he did, he put thumbtacks on the hammers of the piano and then sped the tape up to give it kind of a honky-tonk sound. So he did a lot of tweaking before they ever actually released it. And it paid off. It got to number one for 1 week, but it replaced Love Me Tender. So that's something to crow about. But anyway, it was Mike from Elmwood Park's request for reasons that I don't know. But I think of that song every time I go to the studios of one of my stations, because the back door, I painted it bright green. So I think, oh, Jim Lowe, living in my heart. All right, Mike and Elmwood, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yes, Raleigh, I got a couple of requests.
You do, do you? All right.
Yes, I do.
All right. What you want?
Happy Together by the Turtles.
Oh, God. Okay.
And the other one is Do You Believe in Magic by the Loving Spoonful.
Okay. Yeah, that actually is not a bad song. All right.
Thank you for playing Green Door for me. I appreciate it.
Oh, happy to. And I played the other one earlier that you had requested. You had another one. I don't remember what it was now, but I did play it.
I think it was Susie Darling by Robin
Luke.
Oh,
yeah, Robin Luke. Yeah, we talked about Robin Luke. Yeah, recording that while he was in Punahou High School. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy your show. I have you on every night.
Well, terrific. It's good to have you, Mike, and I really appreciate the call.
I know you do. I know you get busy.
I know
some nights you get busy.
and some nights I just talk to myself. This is one of those nights. So thank you. Appreciate it.
I know I called late last night and you said call back.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, now we'll see whether Ralph in Rockford does. He always calls like at the end of the show, and it would always be fun to talk to him, and I always get like about 2.5 minutes.
I enjoy the show, especially when you talk about, you know, certain radio stations like, you know, different cities like here. Chicago had a lot of good ones, CFL and LS, and LS now is, I don't know, you said that, I know LS was bought by Cumulus.
Yeah, and they filed bankruptcy. And it's an interesting bankruptcy because all the people who had invested or all the employees who got stock options and things like that, there will be not a dollar in stock. For the lenders, they're converting the loans to equity. And the lenders who don't like it, they're going to have to take it anyway. And anybody who has stock will be wiped out.
Wow. Who owns it? Well, who owns the, who owns LS now?
Well, Cumulus has it. It's Cumulus. And it's public. You see, it's been publicly traded. But through this bankruptcy, they'll be taking it private, and they'll be wiping out any of the stock value. So, because obviously who they had to satisfy was the lenders because they couldn't pay back the loans. And that's a fairly common thing. So they're converting that debt to equity. And, you know, the senior lenders get a pretty sweet deal on that and all that. Okay. But the equity then becomes private, not publicly traded. So anybody who's got stock, it's going to be worthless.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, the problem is when, and it's really sad that, these stations were bought the way they were because the debt service is enormous on these stations. And if you go back when, WLS was owned by ABC, there was no debt service. It's a whole different world. Even worse with the CBS stations because when CBS operated BBM and all the other all-news stations, they had no debt service. Right. Well, hell, with Odyssey, that could choke a pony. And you see the results when they're, having a lot of things at night that aren't even live on the news. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it is. But I enjoy your show. I really do.
Well, I'm delighted that you called, and I hope to hear from you soon, and I will play your requests.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
You have a wonderful week.
All right, you too. Yeah, that Love and Spoonful stuff is interesting because most of the Kama Sutra singles and most of the albums, actually, too, were so overmodulated to be just painful. And I had one album that actually, and I still have it, where it's not overmodulated and it's the only one like that. But you listen to the rest of it and say, my God, there's some mastering engineer who should just be shot. All right, so 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh, and Maddie is in Harwood Heights. So, Maddie, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, what's going on?
You tell me.
I was thinking about a couple of things. First thing is my wife, Maria, loves music, and of course, she loves Stevie Wonder. And the other day, I was singing We Can Work It Out.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, why are you singing it that way? And I'm like, that's the version that Stevie Wonder did. We can work it out.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great song to play. I also wanted to, like, I don't know if she's listening now, but I wanted to say that she's in Alaska. She's a flight attendant.
Oh, where is she flying today? What's her itinerary?
She flew from Chicago to Anchorage.
Okay.
And she stays there for about 36 36 hours.
That's a nice layover.
She has all day tomorrow until the evening. She has a couple of little cafes that she likes to go to, which is awesome because she brings food home to me, like sandwiches and scones. And she loves being there. She's been a flight attendant for like 30 years or something.
Is she with Alaska Air?
No, no, no. She's United, which I know has been in the news lately.
Well, it probably is again, but if she's been there 30 years, then she was probably with them when they became Allegis. And talk about losing stock. Oh, my God. It's still painful what happened back then. But that,
you know what? I'm a terrible administrator. When she tells me these things, I kind of get spacey because I'm not a good math guy or administrator guy. I'm not good at filling out forms, you know, that kind of thing. But
Allegis might have been before her, but it really did screw them. In fact, when they came out and said we're now Allegis, I said, oh, another legal loophole. Employees get instantly screwed. And
so she started in the 90s.
Okay.
Before the towers fell, she was a United flight attendant.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like union stuff going on. There's all this. It's beyond me. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm just blessed that she's so smart, and she's such a
that's great
person.
Well, yeah, in the 90s, this was afterwards, because it became Allegis in 87. And, you know, they had United Airlines, they had Western Hotels, they had Hertz Rent-A-Car. And that's why I say they did this whole thing where they said, it's Allegis, and that's where I said another legal loophole, employees get instantly screwed. But they changed their name back to UAL Corp the following year. So it lasted for about a year. The CEO at the time was Richard Ferris. And I'm sure he's long gone. So I used to know about the airlines, not anymore, that's for sure. But yeah, well, good, 30 years.
Sure.
She's got some seniority. She can pick her trips. That's nice.
On her 25th year, they gave her a bicycle that was, you know, not so great.
Oh.
It was like getting a watch.
Yeah.
Coleco.
But still, like I say, with that seniority, she can pretty much bid on the trips she wants and get them. So
she loves Alaska. She loves getting out of Chicago, going to Alaska.
Yeah,
seeing the country, seeing the world. So she's awesome. She's a hero.
Good.
Plus, she worked through 9/11. She worked through 9/11.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Was she working that day?
I was working at a restaurant, and it was a nightmare, and I was in Chicago, and I was watching, I don't even know, CNN or whatever, and I saw the towers fell. One of the towers fell. I got into a car, and then on the radio, I heard the second tower fall, and then we went to a restaurant. We were sold out that day, and then over Chicago, there was combat military airplanes flying over the city.
Oh, yeah.
It was insane.
It was not.
And she was in the air, and I was calling her over and over and over and over again. And thank God I was able to talk to her, and I was like, you're safe. I love you.
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, thank God.
You know.
Yeah.
Thank God. And listen, I'm not going to keep you any longer. We can work it out. Stevie Wonder.
All right. No, I'll do that. And if she's in Anchorage, I bet you she's been to the downtown deli and cafe. Tony Knowles used to own it. He was the governor. So I'm with her in spirit.
I bet she knows it because
yes.
She's obsessed with those cafes.
Yeah.
She's obsessed with the independent places.
Yep.
Raleigh.
All right. Thanks.
Play the song. Her name is Maria. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, good. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So I'm going to write this down, Maria, because I want to. It won't be tonight, and I don't want to forget this. It'll probably be tomorrow night. For Maddie's wife, Maria, who likes Alaska. Okay, we'll do that. Oh, good. Ralph in Rockford has a callback. This is exciting. And we will talk about Katerina Valente. We might even play something. Yeah. And we've got Brian in Jefferson City talk about radio, Mark in Aurora, and Robert in LaGrange. All right. We've been playing some of his requests, and we will probably play his Fleetwoods. They were not named after the car, by the way. Oh, yeah. There's a real story here coming up on WGN Radio.
Bim, bam, bim, bam, bim, bam. Bodobodam, bim bam, bim bam, bim bam. Per un samba piccolino una nota basterà. Altre note troverò,
ma la base è tutta qua. E quest'altra è conseguente, puoi comprenderlo da te, perché tu sei conseguenza inevitabile di me. Per non imitare chi non parla che in maniera imprecisata, approssimata, cerco tra le note d'ogni scalatura una esaminata e abbandonata, e ritorno alla mia nota come tu torni da me. E non cerco che una nota come cerco sempre te. Che mi importa ad ogni nota, re mi fa sol la si do. Me ne basta solo una e su quella canterò. Che mi importa ad ogni nota, re mi fa sol la si do. Me ne basta solo una e su quella.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That Caterina Valente, Samba de una Notte. And I was going to play Bongo Cha 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 because that was in a movie fairly recently, like in the last decade anyway. But that's Caterina Valente, and Ralph in Rockford want to talk about her. So, all right, Ralph, the floor is yours. Thanks for calling back. What you know?
Well, you know that your wish is my command.
Ah, very good.
Yeah. No, that's where we got stuck there, because there was a guy, Daddy Dewdrop. He was taking your time, you know. So, and you needed a little rest, I guess, from that call. That's what you said. So the last thing we talked about was director Caterina Valenti, and we talked about the twist as such, which is... To me, it's quite an interesting subject. And now you played already Caterina Valente. That sounded more like a bossa nova.
Yeah, no, she did. She sang in 13 languages. And, so there's a lot of stuff. And then in the 60s, she worked with Claus Ogerman. And I think he's just terrific. And as far as that goes. And for a while, she was married to a guy who was a lot younger than her, Roy Budd, who did a lot of movie scores and stuff like that. And I think they were married about 7 years. But her first husband, she married him for 20 years. He was a juggler. So, I think he was German. And so that was the deal with him, a German juggler. I don't know his name.
Well, it seems like he juggled her around quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say she was, I was just almost more like a baby than a very young
of course.
Boy. And she was, but she was well known in... especially in Germany.
Oh, well, of course. Well, they moved to Germany. You know, when World War II began, they were in Switzerland, and they couldn't return to Paris, which is where she was born. She was a Parisian of Italian descent. But what they did was they accepted an engagement in Germany. And so, hang on a minute. I'm going to be out of time. Stay where you are. We'll continue this right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Cha cha cha, parlami del Sud America. Quello che dicono laggiù, forse è fantasia e nulla più. Bongo la, bongo cha cha cha, è davvero così fantastica. Dimmelo con sincerità. Nelle notti a Rio che si fa? In testa ve lo mettere, cappelli a pan di zucchero, con cuore sempre in fremito. Ai 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 ai, chissà, chissà, per
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's about all I can take. But I played it because that was a hit for Caterina Valente in 1959. Bongo Cha-Cha-Cha, it was on London Records. And it turned up in 2019 in the soundtrack of Spider-Man Far From Home. And apparently by 2021, it went viral on TikTok. Over 250 million views, particularly in Latin countries in South America, but also Italy and Germany, and some U.S. listeners as well, I'm afraid to say. So, back to Ralph in Rockford.
Yeah, well, thank you for playing these two songs. It was very kind of you. And, well, there was something yesterday we very shortly talked about the twist. And I was just wondering, it didn't say Yaya Twist, but then when this lady from Petula Clark from England, I think she entered the top 20 in 62, and then it was called Yaya Twist.
Yeah, but I think that Johnny Holiday was first. I think Pet Clark was a cover of Johnny Holiday. He was so huge in France. But it's basically an adaptation of Ya Ya, and it's a little different. It was popular in Europe. There were others who recorded it too, and not people that I would know, but there were people across Europe who just thought this was a great song, whether we want to agree or not. But Pet and Johnny recorded it in 62, and of course Lee Dorsey was the year before. But yeah, it's based on it loosely. I should play it, and then people will know what you're talking about. But you're the only person I know who remembers this song, which might be for the best. But I'll let listeners decide, because I've got it. I've got it right on this computer. I'm pretty sure. And here we go. I do believe. Well, we'll see.
Oh, oui, je l'aime. Je l'ai connu là là, en twistant le ya ya. Lui était mon petit chat, viens danser avec moi. Si mon cœur gémit, c'est qu'elle m'a quitté depuis. Depuis ce jour, j'entends enfin. Dans mon cœur lourd comme un refrain. L'air du souvenir n'en finit plus de gémir.
Yeah, well, there you have it. I know Bobby Robinson, who had, of course, Fury Records, got some writer's credit on that, even as Ya Ya Twist. Not sure that Lee Dorsey did, but he should have.
Yeah, it was, the twist, of course, the king of twists here in the U.S. was, of course, Chubby Checker.
Oh, of course, and he put out that album of twisting in every language. I still have that, actually.
Yeah, I did, and amazingly enough, his hit, The Twist, is the only American hit.
Right, to be number one twice in different years. Yeah, and of course, as you know, the reason that he did the record is because Dick Clark didn't think that Hank Ballard was good for general market audiences, and of course, Hank Ballard wrote it, and he got Ernest Evans from the Fish Market and had him record it literally note for note the way Hank Ballard did.
Oh, okay.
So that's story there. But you know, you can't really cry because Hank Ballard got the writer's credit, so he made the money on that song.
Oh, okay. Well, that was interesting. And I think Chubby Checker had one more number one hit with Pony Time in March. 61. So,
yeah, and he had a lot of other, you know, pretty big hits. They weren't number one, but pretty big hits. He had some staying power.
Yeah.
And a very nice guy, actually, all the way around a nice guy. So, good for him.
Well, today you said you're going to talk a little bit about tax evasion and
what I did was I played income tax evasion, you know.
One of the more famous evaders was Marvin Gaye. He went to England twice to evade paying taxes because he owed so much, you know, and so... I remember that from England, and they really loved him over there, and he went to Belgium, I think, Ostend, and somebody really gave him work there in a bar, and he was singing there in Ostend, Belgium, for quite some months.
Oh, yeah. No, he owed, I think, $4.5 million in back taxes when he moved to London. So he went to a tour in 1980, and then he just stayed there. But ultimately, I think that he wound up in financial trouble, to say the least. When he died, he was $10 million in debt, and of course his divorce was bad. He had to pay all the proceeds of the next album to the wife, and it was not and it's funny because I saw on one of these websites at one time, who inherited Marvin Gaye's money, and I had to laugh. I thought, what are you talking about? It's Marvin Gaye's debt. So, of course, you don't inherit debt, fortunately. So, and that's a shame, too, because he was really a very sweet guy early on.
Well, he was married to Barry Gordy's sister.
Yes, and, yes.
No, I'm surprised that Barry Gordy didn't bail him out, you know.
I'm not. as far as that goes. Yeah, he's married to Anna. And very, very tumultuous marriage. And then he married a much younger girl, Janice. And I think she was 17. It was not good. But in any event, he married twice. But Anna was the first one. Yeah, he had to pay her the royalties from the next album. And I'm sure that Barry helped orchestrate that.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad the way he died. I know you talked about it, and I can only verify what you said about his death, because it was an argument about a insurance policy.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it was very, very sad all the way around. But you know, you gotta realize that by that time there were a lot of pharmaceuticals involved in the story. So
that's important.
That was the deal there. But yeah, when he moved to California, he was still married to Anna at the time, and they had a house in the Hollywood Hills. I remember, pretty nice. And then when they split, he moved to Culver City. He had a one-bedroom apartment. And then Janice became a live-in. I think she was 17 when they got together. But anyway, then they got a home in Topanga. But what happened was there was a robbery. No great surprise at Topanga Canyon. But anyway, then they moved to Hidden Hills, and that was high on the hog. That Hidden Hills house was money. And he bought his parents a house and all that that kind of stuff. So he was living high on the hog then. That's before the tax problems hit.
Oh, I see. Well, that was at least he had a little bit of a good time.
Yeah, well, he had bought his parents that house in the West Adams area, and that's where he went after he had not only debt but real drug issues. He wound up living there, and that's, of course, you know, the murder, as you know. But for a while, he had rented this place, really expensive, I remember, in Sherman Oaks. He was doing that. So that was probably, he was back. So that was probably 83 when he had that Sherman Oaks place. That was expensive. And then he moved to West Adams, which was the house he bought for his parents.
Oh, yeah. Well, yesterday, at least, I had some good news.
Yeah? What?
Yeah. that O'Hare is number one again in the world as an airport.
In terms of number of flights?
Yeah, and passengers, I suppose, or flights.
Why is that good news?
Well, for me, it's good news because I really like O'Hare, and when I was a real young man, I flew out of O'Hare quite a bit in the golden times, and I liked O'Hare so much that sometimes I had a good English sports car, didn't use too much gas, and I drove from Rockford many times on the weekend to O'Hare and just went inside, had a little coffee or whatever, and watched the planes. That was, to me, that was very fascinating.
Yeah, when I lived in Rockford, I was still flying then. I gave up commercial flying in 99 and said I'm never doing this again, and I never have. But back in 92, the year I was in Rockford, every weekend I flew somewhere from O'Hare. And I'd come back Monday morning, and the deal was, I think I was on the air at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It might have been 2, but whatever it was, there were some where I knew I'd be, you know, on the Northwest Tollway. I'd be like, oh, God, I'm screwed now. And I'd be like 6 minutes late or whatever. But, yeah, I did a lot of that. And I remember there was one carrier I used to call it the LSD Tunnel. I think it might have been United, but it certainly looked odd that I'd have to walk through. So, yeah, I remember O'Hare well.
Yeah, well, and that's, I do too. And it was, in my time from Rockford, and the tolls were only 10 cents. You go through Belvedere, Hampshire, Marengo, Elgin, and 10 cents on O'Hare, and there you were.
Right.
And so I always remember O'Hare that, of course, unfortunately, these fanatics, these terrorists, they have spoiled a lot of the freedom that we used to have at the airports, you know.
Right. I mean, when we were kids, we'd go out to the airport. You could be on the runway, for God's sakes. You know, it was perfectly fine. Yeah. You'd watch the planes and all that. Yeah, no, those days have been long over. Really started tightening up when they started having those Cuban hijackings.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, that's when they would close off things. Yeah, I used to love Miami International Airport back before the hijackings because it was always fun to watch the Latin American carriers. Oh, man.
Well, at O'Hare, there are so many international flights that come into O'Hare. That's amazing.
Well, of course. You know, there are airports like that are busy, like Atlanta Hartsfield and all that. Of course, Atlanta Hartsfield is more domestic than foreign. But we always used to laugh when I lived in Nashville. When you died, you had to go through Atlanta, and that was pretty much the truth. There were all the cities in the South. You'd have to go to Atlanta and then fly from there if you were going somewhere. So yeah, it's a different world, though.
Yeah, unfortunately, but. That was one, and I think O'Hare set possibly a new record yesterday for rain, over 3 inches.
Well, right, and that's where I mentioned David Jennings was saying he didn't know whether it was a hurricane or a tornado. So, so actually, you being German, I'm sure you know this, that the world's first commercial airline was a German airline.
Was it Lufthansa?
No, it was DeLag. DeLag.
DeLag.
Yeah, and that was 1909, and then that was the first one, and they were flying Zeppelins and things like that, you know, but right, absolutely, and then, but it was commercial. Post-World War One, they were doing flights, they had modified some biplanes and all that, so Lufthansa was a merger, it came out of that was in the 20s. It was Deutsche Lufthansa, and that was Berlin, and it merged with Junkers. We call it Junkers. Yeah. I don't know what the real name was, but it was Junkers.
Junkers.
Yeah, right. Well, to me, it was always Junkers. But anyway, you know, of course, during the Third Reich, it became absorbed in the military. But then, you know, post-war, the new Lufthansa was 55. Yeah. And but then, remember in East Germany, Interflug? Oh, God. Oh, God. There's something we don't want to talk about. Then they had Air Berlin for a moment there. So
Berlin, and that. Tegelhof was the airport and so on.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate that even this so-and-so Hitler, that he wasn't even German.
Of course. No,
it's Germany had the sense that America has that you cannot become president of the United States unless you were born here.
Yes, that's right.
You know, then this all this thing would have never happened. You know, I mean, he brought Germany with his Nazis, you know, to the brink of extinction.
Well, the whole thing was crazy. He wasn't even Aryan, for God's sakes, but we don't want to get into that. Yeah, it's just...
No, I know that, but I mean, it was so unfortunate.
Well, what was unfortunate is what happened in the Weimar Republic, which led to the foundation of that, but that's for some other show that actually talks about things that matter.
Sure. Okay, well, thank you for your time today.
Always. Great to talk to you. I appreciate it, Ralph.
Thank you, Rally, and I'm sure you have some more interesting. I'm waiting for this WLS.
Well, we'll talk to Robert. We'll talk to Robert and LaGrange about WLS coming up. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, bye. All right, so all that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
I love you so, doobie-doo. Please hold me so tight, doobie-doo. All through the night, dum-dum, dum-dum-dum.
All right, after the news, I'll tell you all about the soap opera of the Fleetwoods and Dolphin Records and everything else. And we'll talk to Robert and LaGrange and you too on WGN Radio.
Dreaming, I'm always dreaming. Dreaming, love will be mine. Searching, I'm always searching. Hoping, someday I'll find someone to love me, someone who needs me. But until then, well, I'll keep on dreaming, keep right on dreaming, dreaming till my dreaming comes true. Dreaming, I'm always dreaming.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Johnny Burnett, It Was a Charmed Life Until It Wasn't. Yeah, this is a horrible story. It was 1964. And, of course, Dreamin' was a few years before that and just a huge hit for him. And then before that, of course, the Johnny Burnett trio with his brother Dorsey and all that. But Dreamin' was 1960, and that was Liberty. But 4 years later, 1964, he's on the water. I think it was Clear Lake, California, not Iowa. And it was a fishing boat, but it wasn't lit, and it was at night. And some cabin cruiser just slaughtered him. And he, you know, basically flew out of the boat and drowned. And it was a real sad story. So, yeah, I think we would have heard more of him as far as that goes. And, of course, his big success with the Liberty Years, don't you know, like Dreamin'. All right, so that was another request from Robert in LaGrange. So, Robert, welcome back to WGN.
You know what? I almost forgot about that tragedy that he had.
Oh yeah, it was terrible. And Dorsey, Dorsey lived until about 79, but I don't think he ever got over it. How would you? Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Well, in regards to WLS, I was just wondering. Some of them probably are no longer with us. Some of the original DJs, like Clark Weber, Art Roberts. You know,
Mort Crowley. Don't forget Mort and and Gene Taylor, Sam Holman, Bob Hale, Dex Card actually was there as well. This is when they they debuted on May 2nd, 1960.
That's right. I was about 13 then. Yeah, but the thing I was going to say about Clark Weber was he seemed geared a little more for the young adult more than the teens.
Well, that was actually in 1960 true for all of them. I remember, of course, the infamous disc jockey convention, the Todd Storr second annual disc jockey convention in 1959, which of course gave way to the Paola hearings and all that. But if you were there, and I was, the big entertainment was Count Basie. It wasn't Top 40. These guys didn't want to hear it. They'll play Top 40, but they didn't want to hear it. So it was Count Basie, and then Peggy Lee did a recording session there. And all of that, but Clark used to be on Steve and Johnny's show.
Oh,
I used to. I'm pretty sure, unless I've gone crazy, that I used to hear him there. So anyway, but
because he used to even the tunes that he played in particular in the morning, they were nice. But some of them were like more like Victor Moore or people like that.
Well, remember, 1960 Top 40 was still Top 40. That was the 40 most popular hits. Some of them were pop standards. But believe me, he didn't get to play things that someone else didn't get to play. That was tightly controlled.
Oh, I see. Oh, sure. I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't prior to the, and 1960 was a pivotal year because that's when they started the Paola hearings. And we used to laugh that prior to the Paola hearings, you know, you'd have to bribe a disc jockey individually, one radio station, seven disc jockeys. Well, after that, when they had a music director controlling everything, hell, it was only one person to bribe. You know, two things happened because of that. One is that the earlier jocks, the Alan Freed of the world, you know, Alan, if you listen to him, he was a terrible disc jockey, but he had great ears and he played what the kids wanted to hear. He was great. And so his show was the music. That's why he always said, I never took money for a record beforehand. You paid me afterwards. And the point was that he was not going to trash his reputation to play something he didn't want to be played. But after the hearings, the disc jockey no longer had that freedom. The music didn't define them. So that's when they had to more than ever develop personalities of their own because they weren't picking the tunes.
I recall vaguely though about that scandal.
The deal on that was it came right after the quiz scandals, you know, and
that's right.
ABC was so thrilled because they didn't have any exposure in the quiz channel scandals because they didn't make quiz shows. But here they were, they were front and center because the Dick Clark Saturday Night Show was owned by Dick Clark and ABC. Now, at the time, prior to the outcome of the Paola hearings, it was not illegal for a disc jockey to take money for a record. It was perfectly legal. You just had to report it. So, in other words, if you didn't report it, it was tax evasion. And if somebody, if someone wanted to charge you with anything other than tax evasion, they would try to charge you with things like bribery. But there was no such thing as payola. Now, for licensees, it was illegal. Now, it was not illegal to take the money. It was illegal not to report it. And it happened in two ways. It happened in payola and plugola. Now, plugola was more like commercials, you know, and payola, of course, but if you were willing to say this record is brought to you by ABC Paramount, that would have been perfectly legal. Well, what happened with ABC on the Saturday Night Beechnut Show with Dick Clark is that they were getting money from an airline, big money. I think it was American, but I'm not sure, so I don't want to say that. But it was a major airline, and what they were saying was that travel was arranged by, except travel was not arranged by. So in other words, this was absolute definition plugola. And that is why, when ABC knew it, that's why everybody wondered, well, why did they hang Alan Freed, but Dick Clark got favorite of treatment? Well, Dick Clark got favorite treatment because ABC could have hung for it. And so, but as far as what caused it, and a lot of people who think they're into history will say that, well, what really kicked off the Paola hearings was a Miami Herald article right after it. It was Memorial Day weekend of 59, and the headline was "Booze, Broads, and Bribes." Well, let me tell you, that was a subset. That was not why. Here's exactly what happened. And so I was living at the Americana Hotel in Bal Harbour, Florida at the time. I was a kid, but I know this stuff cold. Now, here is what happened, though. There were two things. Firstly, Mitch Miller hated rock and roll, and I mean hated it. And he believed to every fiber in his body, believed that the only reason a disc jockey would ever play a rock and roll record was if they were paid to play it. So while the quiz show hearings were going on, he was calling Congress and anybody who'd listening saying, you need to investigate these disc jockeys. All right, that alone wouldn't have done it. What did it? Mm-hmm. Well, let's back up and talk about why there was a disc jockey convention. Back then, a rock and roll disc jockey was kind of akin to a child rapist or something. You know, they couldn't rent an apartment. They couldn't open a bank account. It was just considered these rock and roll people were just scum. Wow. So Todd Storrs put the first disc jockey convention together in 1958 in Kansas City, Muehlbach Hotel, to uplift the image of the disc jockey. And one of the things he did was he would have dignitaries, politicians, and all that speak at sessions. Okay. Worked out really well in Kansas City, except for Mitch Miller stood up in Kansas City and said rock and roll is dead, and KJR in Seattle changed their format. But never mind that. All right, so now we have a year later, we're in Bal Harbour, and who is their dignitary? Well, their dignitary is the governor of Tennessee. And give him hell, Clements. And his lovely wife, Lucille. And they came down with Pat Boone, by the way, don't you know? They flew down together. Well, Lucille was kind of a fashion plate. In fact, at the 1956 Democratic Convention, she was all dolled out, and the Hearst photographers were looking at her and taking pictures. And everybody talked about Lucille and how well-dressed she was. This is important to our story. All right, so here comes the governor, Governor Clements, give him hell, Clements, and Lucille and Pat Boone. Now, unbeknownst to them, Moish Leiby, who owned Roulette Records, he flew in every hooker on the East Coast. I mean, it had to be. I don't know where he got them, but he got them. Now, they were free to the disc jockeys, but the way the disc jockeys recognized the girls was they were wearing a green dress, a telltale green dress, the green gown. All right? And that was sort of like shorthand for, if you see the green gal. Well, they didn't tell Lucille. All right, so here's Lucille with the governor and walking through the lobby of the America. I can see it. And she's wearing a green dress. So, of course, here now Clement gets mad. And so, in addition to Mitch Miller, he's now calling Congress, you need to investigate these people. And that's what started the Paola hearings. But they did not have a grasp. Firstly, they didn't understand why Dick Clark would be at the front and center of it. Now, Dick Clark was dirty as hell. I'm not going to say he wasn't, but that wasn't the point. The point was that when you had a record that was a hit on American Bandstand, it was a hit all at once across the nation. And if something's a hit simultaneously, it's got enough points to climb the charts nationally to the top. If it's not that way, independent labels, well, it'll be a hit in Buffalo, a rolling hit. Then after a while, it's a hit in Cleveland, and it's a hit in L.A., and it's a hit in St. Louis. But it's on the charts for a lot of weeks, but it never has the points simultaneously. So the idea of getting someone on Bandstand, that gave you that simultaneous exposure, and people were falling all over themselves to give them money. Now, he was a smart man. Yeah. He didn't take the cash as cash. He took it corporately. Basically, he owned publishing companies. He owned labels. Oh, he had pressing plant. Don't forget the pressing plant. And more. And, of course, like if you appeared on American Bandstand, you had to sign your check over for your appearance fee to one of his corporations. You didn't get to keep the appearance money. But it was all done above board. You know, so basically they apologized to him, which, you know, should make anybody vomit, but you know, that's sort of what happened. And Alan Freed never knew. He died 4 years later, drunken. He died of a bleeding ulcer because he never understood why ABC would throw him to the wolves and protect Dick Clark. But if he had the information, he would have known that ABC was protecting itself because of that Saturday Night Beach Nut show. And that's the story.
Wow. Yeah, and I heard too that Dick Clark's Dick Clark's father owned a couple of radio stations.
I don't know. I know. Yeah. Dick knew some people at Triangle. Dick was hired originally as the night guy on FIL radio. I don't know if he knew Roger Tripp or who, but yeah, he had a friend at Triangle. And of course, the reason Bandstand was there is, remember, Triangle owned TV Guide. And when ABC wanted a national show, they didn't want to do it in New York because of the union expenses. And so as they were looking back then, there were local shows up and down the Eastern Seaboard. You know, there was Gene Loving in Norfolk, and there was Bob Grant in D.C., and there was Buddy Dean in Baltimore, and there was Bob Horn in Philadelphia. So they wanted Philadelphia, but they didn't want Bob Horn. So they set him up. Absolutely set him up so they could get him out of there on a moral turpitude clause, and that's a sad story. And then Dick Clark, photogenic, looked the part. They put him in there. So that's how that happened. But the original bandstand was Bob Horn, no doubt about it.
Yeah, because I heard it when the original bandstand went back to 52 or 53.
Yeah, 52 was WFIL-TV bandstand. And it was 52.
Locally in Philly, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Philly, right there in the city of Philadelphia. Yeah. And you know, Bob didn't look the part. That's true. But he knew the music. He had been a musician himself. And he was the only guy I know who was able to navigate between the pop standards he was playing in 1952 and the rock and roll he was playing in 1956. I don't know anybody else who could have weathered that and still had the credibility, and he did, but he didn't look the part. And it's a whole long story that I'll tell you sometime about how they did it, but it was very sad.
Well, thanks a lot for all that info. Really interesting.
Absolutely. All right, well, always good to talk to you. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye now.
All right, so what's the first song WLS played when they went top 40? Do you remember that? Alley-oop, Hollywood Argyles, you betcha. Yeah, all right, so I'm talking too much is what's happening here, and I apologize. But we have 3 hours tomorrow night, don't you know? And we have a few minutes after this on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we'll forgo the bumper. I've got 5 minutes, and I want to talk to five people. It's not going to happen, but that's why we've got tomorrow night, 3 big hours starting at 10. Steve in Western Springs, Illinois, welcome to WGN Radio.
Raleigh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and listen to your show.
Thanks.
Very interesting what you were just talking about, because I remember in your book you went into great detail about Bob Horn to Dick Clark with Alan Freed and everything.
Yeah.
For the sake of speculation, based on what you just talked about, if you were managing Alan Freed as the Paola scandal unfolded, what would you have done to reinvent him and save his career?
Well, the biggest thing that could be done was to absolutely give him more emotional support than business support. What happened was he became a broken man. He literally didn't understand why they'd protect Dick Clark and not him. He didn't get it. And when, after the hearings, you know, he's the only person, he was not convicted of payola, but commercial bribery, and he could have appealed that, he could have won that. But by then, he was so broken, he didn't care. And so the biggest thing I could have done for Alan Freed was explained exactly what was going on and why and how he could pick himself up and combat it. What he wound up doing at the time, Todd Storrs tried to automate WQAM, God help us all. And so he went down there for a moment, and that didn't work out. He wound up in Los Angeles at K-Day, ultimately in Palm Springs. But more than anything, he was a broken man.
But with all of his contacts, and from Cleveland to New York, the presumption would be he did favors for people along the way, as much as he took money, etc.
Of course.
Why wouldn't someone have stepped forward and say, Alan, you've got to admit your losses in this compartment, but with your name, equity, and fame nationally, here's what we can do. Why didn't anyone step forward?
Look at the people who were around him, people like Moish Levy. You think that he had a soul? Because I'm not going there. Unfortunately, he was not surrounded with people who would have done that.
But even if you're a Moish Levy, who clearly was in it for the money, aren't you looking at an Alan Freed? You're looking at a damaged Alan Freed, meaning any project you sign him to, you're going to get him at a vastly discounted rate. But he's still Alan Freed.
Well, initially, you're not going to get them on the radio, though. You see, that nobody would touch them because of the Paola hearing. So it was a thing where, you know, it worked out the way it did. Should it have worked out that way? No. But what Alan Freed really needed was the support of people around him who really had his best interests at heart. And he didn't have a lot of those people near him.
And he did the five-year tailspin.
Yes. Oh, yes. It was just heartbreaking. Yeah.
Well, in your book, you also said you got to pick your battles. You have to recognize unwinnable battles, correct?
Yeah, right. Right.
So apparently he had no winnable battle on the horizon where he could get sound advice to pursue.
Yeah, that he saw. Again, if he had people who really were of the mind to be helpful, and if someone could reach him and break the spell of the depression and all that, maybe so. But, life ain't black and white.
Do you think anti-Semitism played into it?
No.
Why?
So much of the record industry is Jewish. So very much.
Do you think he honked off so many people during his ascent that he was ally-free?
I think there were a number of people for other reasons, and I'm not going to tell tales out of school about personal lives. I'm just not going there. I didn't go there in the book either, but there were issues.
Your book was fascinating. You got other people to get to.
No, actually, I think I'm out of time. You've ended the show, and thank you. You call me again soon.
Thank you.
All right. So, and apologies. Oh, my God. Valerie in Warrenville. We'll talk about abundance checks tomorrow night. Call me back. Eduardo, I want to hear about AutoZone. Mark in Aurora, we will talk about Jim. And Brian in Jefferson City, who called to bail me out, and then I got a lot of calls. Thank you for that, Brian. Call me back tomorrow night. 21 hours from now, we'll do it again. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Bob for keeping us on the air tonight. Adam's a bit under the weather. We thank John for screening your calls and keeping me in line. But above all, you know the deal, I thank you. That's what makes the show a pleasure to do. We'll do it again tomorrow night here on WGN Radio.